This evening we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 17, entitled The Divisions of Faith, text number 17. Translation. The threefold austerity performed with transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits, but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme, is called austerity in goodness. And this is referring to the past three verses, 14 through 16. Austerity of the body consists in worship of the Supreme Lord. The Brahman is the spiritual master and superiors like the father and mother, and in cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and nonviolence. That's austerity of the body. And austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature, austerity of speech. And austerity of the mind, satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence. So body, mind, and words. And Rupa Goswami tells us, Iha yasya harer dasye kamana manasa gira. Again, body, mind, and words. Nikilas vapi avastasu jivan mukasu chaite. He's liberated even though acting within the material world. And in another way, in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm not sure the verse here, but Krishna says, Yat karoshi, yadashnashi, yajjuhosi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi konteya, tat kurushva madarpanam. Arpanam means offering. So all that you do, yat karoshi, yadashnasi, all that you eat, yajjuhosi, all that you do is worship, dasiyat, all that you give in charity, give away, yat tapasyasi, all austerity, everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. Ultimately, he is described as bhokta. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam. He is the supreme enjoyer. Bhokta means bhoga, like we offer to the Lord bhoga, and it becomes prasadam. Bhoga means enjoyment, and all bhoga is meant for bhokta, the supreme enjoyer. And Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Bhakti means to engage our senses in giving pleasure to the Supreme. And how do we do that? That is why we have a temple, and that is why we have a deity or the deities, and that is why we render service. We're trying to get into a spirit of giving everything to Krishna. Now, one may reason that what is the use in decorating metal? What is the use in offering real food that could nourish a flesh and blood person? What is the use in giving it to some brass or ashtadattu statues? But it is the nature of the material world. Whatever we do for the body, it will be finished. And then what do we do? Where do we go? So at that time, the one who has developed a service attitude, a spirit of service to the deity, he will get an opportunity to continue his service. Now, it's not just a casual attitude, but it's an attitude that is so intense is compared with greed. It's compared with the intensity of lust, the opposite of kama is prema. And it's the opposite in the sense that the goal is different, but it's not the opposite in terms of intensity or like hot and cold. Cold is the opposite of hot, but there's no hot in cold. It's the absence of hot. But in lust or in prema, there is kama, but it's purified. There is an intense, greedy desire to serve the deities or to serve Krishna. And because Krishna is the supreme controller, if he takes away your body, then he has to give you something else to serve. And, of course, if you're fixed in his service, then he'll allow you to serve him directly. So body, mind, and words covers the whole gamut or the whole range of our activities, because everything that we do comes within that parameter. And, of course, everything begins in the mind. So therefore, we have to keep ourselves pure in mind. One could say that all I need to do really is just perform some actions which will demonstrate my desire to please the Lord, that will demonstrate my love. But it is quite possible that someone could make a show of devotional service. Tilak nake, could have tilak on the nose, nake. Gantai mala, could have kanti on the neck. He could be wearing dhoti, kurta, everything. But he could be a Kali Chela, a great cheater, pretender, possible. Therefore, a genuine devotee makes every effort to clean his mind internally so that the actions of the body are never given a chance to act immorally or in a non-spiritual way. In fact, the actions of a devotee, although they appear to be like mundane activities, but the quality which makes them different is the consciousness with which they're done. And the consciousness acts first through the mind, then on the physical plane. And, of course, words belie the mentality also. For example, we see that someone could appear again to be very nice and spiritual, but we only really know when they open their mouth and say something. And of course, we read the other day that the standard of, or the austerity of speech is to speak from scripture, to say something, but it's not your something. You're simply repeating what the supreme speaker is saying. That in itself is an austerity because, A, the tongue has a long standing history of speaking nonsense. The tongue has two businesses, to vibrate and to taste. And as long as, even in this lifetime, forget past lifetimes, even before and we're in a unique situation because we have come to devotional service after at least 20 years or so of accelerated sense gratification. In other words, in the modern days, people really experience a lot in their childhood and in their youth because there are no social constraints as there used to be even 50 or 100 years ago. I know when I first went to India, I was quite shocked by the morals of the young people, although I could see that they were agitated. But due to social custom, they dare not cross the boundaries. It just wasn't considered proper, and that was only 30 years ago. So we have experienced a lot on the one hand, and yet we have also seen that there's no hope there, or in other words, whatever we have had, just increasing that or even maintaining it. I just spoke to one boy a few days ago, and he mentioned how he had been married recently, 6 months, 8 months ago, and usually, especially, his wife was virgin, and he was not a man about town. He was not a very experienced person. He was quite passionate, wasn't weak in any way, but just simple. So when they got married, the first 6 months were really enthusiastic to enjoy their senses. But they both saw that gradually, their experiences became less and less satisfying. And they could understand that there was something more than just conjugal union. And so we have got that experience, and we're able to understand the value of austerity, but we're conditioned, and our attachment, it's like on the one side but on the other side you're so conditioned that you can't get free from it completely. The classical problem is, who is better off? Someone who goes through a life of sensuous experience and then renounces, or someone who's never had any experience and has been kept pure? Who has an easier time? Well, I would say from my vantage point that I wish that I had not been born in, a culture where you're practically forced, or it's so much pressure from all sides, socially and by force of environment and by even parental demonstration and everything. We're forced to go after a certain standard of sense gratification, and we just don't feel that we're right. But the problem is, when you want to actually purify yourself, purify your existence, you've got a really good video replay machine in your brain. And it's hard to, if it were digital, then you could just, erase, but if it were just a text file or something, but unfortunately it's a little bit stronger than that. So we have to practice the sadhana of austerity. Then we'll just like we read, austerity of the body. Okay, worship of the Supreme Lord. What is that worship of the Supreme Lord? It's what we're being taught, puja, being taught to bow down. That's the first step, practically. Of course, Prabhupada taught people to chant Hare Krishna, and that was good. And they became purified to the stage where they were prepared to take initiation. But then the first thing that he taught them was you have to bow down to your spiritual master. Or, of course, everybody saw that Prabhupada, when they opened the temple on 22nd Avenue and they had a little altar, simple little altar, Prabhupada would come into the temple room and the first thing he would do would be bow down. So they learned from that. Manmana, always think of me. Bhava mad bhakto madhyaji. Mam namaskuru, namaskuru, offer obeisances to me. Worship the brahmanas, the spiritual master, mother and father. Again, we discussed this, the importance of, just like there's good energy and there's bad energy. Now, I deal with a lot of people who are approaching spiritual life and are looking for spiritual life, but they're troubled by the material world. And the fact is that if one is really agitated from the material world, it will be very hard to take up chanting japa or regulation or anything. Therefore, yam niyam asana in the Ashtanga yoga process, which was meant for Satya yoga, when conditions were a lot better, the first business was to make the body peaceful and then make the mind peaceful. Then comes dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Only after you're peaceful. If your mind is raging a mile a minute, if you're troubled by where am I going to eat, where am I going to sleep, what am I going to do for a job? So, generally, I try to talk to these nice people that come and convince them to try to keep good thoughts in their head. Usually they come with traumas. Usually some relationship, breaking up, or just I'm communicating with one girl who is works in my sister's office, a big law firm, very big law firm. My sister is the legal secretary to the senior partner, whatever. So this other girl is quite qualified, and she's looking for spiritual life. She's part Chinese, part Indian, and so, but she's going through some traumas in her life. Her marriage is breaking up. She's really frustrated having to work very hard at two jobs or something. I don't know. She's really, her mind is in a knot. And I know it's going to be very hard for her. So my first advice to her was, she's got her computer, and I encouraged her to just keep all bad thoughts away. Try to think good thoughts. So she put a lotus flower on her computer. And she was very happy, and she wrote me that I keep a lotus flower on my computer, and I feel a lot better now. And so keeping good thoughts in the mind is something like keeping the mind. There's two things that you can do in relationship to people who are senior by age, people who are senior by learning, people who are senior, many standards of seniority. You can offer your respect, or you can, as our generation, my generation, it started with us, or maybe it started earlier, but I think it's mostly with our generation. It's continued through the succeeding generations up till now. People do not like to accept authority. They're totally antagonistic to any authority, to the idea of surrendering to an authority. Now, there may be reasons for that. People may have been cheated, and you've got to be sympathetic to that because it's a fact. But what is the fallout from that? What is the development of that? It carries forward. They lose their respect for this authority, that authority, and then they automatically conclude, I got counterfeit money here, so all money is counterfeit. So reject the whole process of respect for authority, right up to God. Don't trust even God. And of course, even if God hasn't entered into their life, by the time they get to Him, or even there's a proposal or an opportunity to come to Him, they won't be able to take advantage of the opportunity because Krishna is Bhokta. Krishna is Parameshwar. Krishna is the goal of all our activities. We are small. He is great. And to just accept that in one mouthful from being starved, you know, having no food, to eating a huge meal, it's very dangerous and not possible. People who are starving in Africa, they can't feed them. They go with food to distribute. People think, oh, send these cereals and send this milk and send this cheese and butter and all these nice rich foods which we're accustomed to eating. Send them to Africa, feed the people. Well, the people are so starving that if you fed them any of that, they would die. Interestingly enough. So they first have to feed them on a very simple diet of easily digestible, a lot of, well, carbs, some protein. Gradually they build up their strength. Gradually they introduce a little fat and a little more carbohydrate, a little more protein. So if people try to accept surrender to Krishna all at once, from where they are today, it's very hard. So therefore, here's the deities. You can look at them as stone, a little bit or a lot. Sometimes people come and the deities are dressed so nicely that they agree to overlook the fact that they think it's wood or stone or metal. These are so beautiful, they just get absorbed. Nice flower garlands. Oh, nice embroidery. Very beautiful. So they're in the process of surrendering. They see others bow down and, okay, this is what you do over here, I'll do it. They haven't really identified it with giving up their false ego and becoming fully a servant. But it's... you can take as much as you, when you're in, if Krishna were, you know, if Krishna descended the latest incarnation, unscheduled, but he just stopped into Ljubljana, he was in the next room and we went there, it would be a heavy thing. We would all go there with our hearts in our mouth. We wouldn't know what to do. Here's this Supreme Lord who knows all our thoughts and our deeds and who can grant us liberation and freedom, and He knows how sinful and bad we've been, and it would be very threatening. So we learn to surrender to the Brahmanas. who at least speak about Krishna, or the spiritual master who has made a contract to help us and has agreed to. He probably does, a lot of times he doesn't know what he's getting into, but he's agreed to take our karma. Help! I renege on this contract. But, yeah, it's just, you know, he can do it because he always has the option to just surrender to his spiritual master and let it all slide through him. The moment he tries to deal with it himself, he's finished. But anyway, superiors, father and mother, that's a lighter form of submission. Cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and nonviolence. Of course, these are obvious ones. Godliness, cleanliness, simplicity. Retaining one's bodily fluids. Very important. A man's strength, his power, comes from celibacy. Grihastha brahmachari is good. It's a kind of good compromise. It's got promise. You can go from there. If you're not a grihastha brahmachari, then chances are you're in quicksand. You know what quicksand is? You know what it is? Like you've seen the movies of Tarzan in the jungle, and you know, somebody's running through the forest and he comes to a little pond and it's muddy and he can't get out. He just goes sucked down and down. He's, help, help. And Tarzan comes and hands him a stick and, you know, pulls him out or something. That's called quicksand. What do you call it? Huh? Rice? I don't know. What do you call it in Slovenian? Huh? GD Basic. Sounds like a computer language or something. Okay. That's good, I'm deaf. You know. So, brahmachari, it automatically gives one control of his senses, gives good brain tissue, builds good brain tissue, so that one can cut through all the fog of Maya. One can discriminate. And for a woman, her chastity gives her power. A woman becomes very powerful. Gandhari, and there's so many great Archie. Their chastity gave them. The Sita had the power to burn the whole universe. So, celibacy, nonviolence, and that's the body. Austerity of the body, austerity of the speech is, again, words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others. If you also, in regularly reciting Vedic literature, if you do that, then you'll know exactly what to do. Truthful, pleasing, beneficial, it's all there in the Vedic literature. Satisfaction, our austerities of the mind, purification of one's existence. So, this type of activity, whether it's austerity, tomorrow we'll discuss penance, we discuss charity, everything in the mode of goodness. We want to discriminate between passion and ignorance and goodness and try. Now, we know that chanting Hare Krishna is all you need. It is, one can eradicate more sin. Pathakam pataki naraha. One can eradicate more sin than is possible to commit. That's a lot of sin. By chanting Hare Krishna. So, what need? I just have to chant Hare Krishna. That's true. But, again, we say that if you follow the regulative principles, that your chanting will have a more powerful effect on you, the purification will be more quick, and even while chanting, you still have to spend time in this material world. Very few people come into the material world and are ready to leave the next day and to go back to Godhead. They pick up the beads and all of a sudden, you know, the flower airplane comes to pick them up. I've never met too many people like that. So we should expect, we can expect, that it will take us a whole lifetime. And Srila Prabhupada said it took him more than 30 years to chant purely. So what to speak of us? 70 years may not be enough. But I think so. Prabhupada gave us his guarantee that if we tried. But we need friends. We all need friends, whether it be a wife or a husband or a brahmachari friend or the temple president or whatever it is. Everybody needs someone. Dadati pratigranati guyamaketi prichiti bhunte bojayate chaiva sadvritim pritilaksham. This is a formula for developing a relationship, but it is also a need that we have. We need to feel that we're being recognized. Everyone needs a little confirmation. Again, that's another thing that I experience all the time. Devotees come to me and they're doing okay, but there's some doubt, so they ask some questions, and from my experience I try to encourage them, yeah, you're doing well, don't worry, you know, you're on track, keep going, you'll be successful. So we all need a little confirmation. We need someone was talking the other day about how they weren't very enthusiastic to open 10 temples in Ljubljana or to, you know, have 10,000 disciples. In other words, they weren't interested in big things. They were really happy just to do little things. And was it okay? Did I think it was okay to just be satisfied with little things? Because we're always pushed and taught that, Prabhu, if you want to advance, you have to take responsibility, and we're making you the temple president tomorrow, and the day after you're going to be the GBC, okay? But when you think about a relationship, a lot of times it's the little things that make a real difference. The big things, you know, sometimes they never happen. The big things never happen in most people's lives. It's only in the movies that the big things happen. You know, it's only in the fairy tales. A lot of times life is full of just a lot of little things. And we need someone who we can share little things with, and they're genuine and they mean something, and it brings us peace of mind and satisfaction. We need someone that we can share prasadam with. We need someone to give gifts to. So we have to, if we're thinking on making devotional service a way of our life, we have to be, again, prepared to offer respect to others, manina, mana, dana, not only to seniors and superiors, but to everybody, to an aunt. Offer your obeisances to an aunt. No, but at least appreciate that you don't step on them. I know people, I don't think I ever did it much, but I know people when they see a spider, you know, they just want to step on it and squish it, you know. Well, spiders, it's not a black widow spider, so you're okay. It's not a tarantula. It's a little garden spider. You don't have to squish him. Leave him alone. But, so what to speak of spiders, we have to offer respect to our friends. People are peers. That's why we offer obeisances in the morning. We address one another as Prabhu. I just read a letter the other day. Prabhupada was writing to one devotee, and the devotee, it was Siddha Sarup. Prabhupada was saying that, Siddha Sarup was saying that, Prabhupada, I like you. I mean, you're really great. You're a pure devotee and everything, but these other devotees, they're just out to lunch. I mean, I can't deal with them, And Prabhupada got quite angry with Siddha Sarup and chastised him that you cannot worship the deity and not recognize the devotees or work. If you love the spiritual master, then you love the spiritual master's dog also. Love me, love my dog. So one has to somehow develop a respectful attitude towards all the Vaishnavas. Now, especially peers, but even younger devotees. Jayananda, perfect example. There's a beautiful essay, Memories, about Jayananda, written by my godbrother Kalakanta. And he says that, in one sentence, he says that old devotees, older senior devotees, and younger devotees alike had the same experience with Jayananda. They both were made to feel like they were his superiors. That was his nature. He just made everybody feel like they were better than him. And he did it so naturally. It wasn't pretentious, like somebody falsely being humble or something, just as a show. That can also be a show. But Jayananda was so nice. It's nice to talk about people like Jayananda, because sometimes it's hard to believe that anyone could embody all these wonderful verses. Or again, someone was talking to me the other day and mentioning how we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita the friendly nature of the devotees and the loving feelings. And we think, is that Hans Christian Andersen? Or, was Krishnadas Kaviraj stoned when he wrote all this stuff? Or is that real? Were people really like that? I mean, I guess they're a lot different than today. But we can get a lot better. And we should recognize that everything that's being given to us, we need it. It's not that it needs us. We need it. We need a relationship with a spiritual master. The spiritual master does not need us. We need the association of devotees. The temple will go on without us. There's no one who's inexpendable. Every one of us is expendable or can be done without. Things will go on, they have gone on, and they will go on. We need a place where we can come and have satsang. And we need devotional service, the chance. We're working. It's interesting, in America, especially in the 80s and 90s, we'll have to see what this decade brings, but in the 80s and 90s, there was the growth, very large growth, of organizations who provided opportunities for people who were constantly working, morning, noon, and evening. They were yuppies, young urban professionals, or just people dealing with a materialistic society and trying to keep pace. But they needed to feel they were doing something to benefit the world. Just having a good salary and an apartment and a car, and it wasn't enough. And they needed to feel something. And these different charity groups would find situations where someone on their lunch hour could go for an hour to a particular charity near their office and feed children or work with, you know, old people or make some contribution. It just wasn't enough to deal with the hardcore world and get ahead and feel satisfaction. Very few people, materialistic, demoniac people, they can live with that. But most people, they need to feel like their existence means something, it makes a difference. So now, in the latter part of the, middle and latter part of the 90s and coming into this decade, there's a very strong, they've graduated now, it's not just mundane welfare work, but there's a very strong need for people to be connected with some spiritual teaching or purification or something. So you find all these classes in Torah or Bible or all these hammams, whatever, doing things at noon. You know, you find big executives spending their lunch hour going to some religious class or teaching or seminar or workshop, or after work, but before they get home, on their way home, a lot of energy is being put into that. They're growing. So we also definitely need to find a place in our life for devotional service. It is to our advantage. It's a great privilege. And the benefit that we will get will filter down. It's not only that we're going to get the benefit at the end of our life. You know, the end of your life, you've got a big voucher and you can go and cash it in and get all your rewards, you know. Not like that. You know, up until the end of your life, all you have is a piece of paper saying, you know, I was a devotee for so many years, I did this amount of devotion. You don't enjoy it, you're just adding to it. You've got a bank account on which there's two signers, there's you and there's God, and, you know, until he signs off, you don't get any dividends or anything. You know, it's not like that. Karmana manasa gira. If you act now, in this way, you will be like the lotus flower. Someday, not immediately, but you will come to a space, you come to a place, you come to a realization in your life where you're in the world, but you cannot be hurt anymore. Not only that, every act, that's the negative side, or the side where, you know, you can't, your pain stops, cessation. I remember I had one boy coming to see me. He was a real punker, and he had tattooed in the back of his head, "No more pain." You know, it was a big thing on the back of his head. Every time he'd walk away, I'd see it. Oh. It became a joke between him and me, no more pain. So, well, we want that. And Buddhism is it's becoming kind of popular as a theoretical option. Not many people are thinking of practicing Buddhism, but it's a nice thing to be affiliated with. And you've got all these movie actors and musicians and people who are like, you know, card-carrying members of Lord Buddha or something, but they don't, you know, Prabhupada said, someone asked him, what about Buddhism? He said, oh, you're a Buddhist? No, it's just incredible. You do like Lord Buddha, and you go to the forest, you do like Siddhartha, then you talk about Buddhism. But one of the attractive things is that about it is nirvana, no more pain, because people are in a lot of pain. And the stress that we go through in trying to get ahead, even if you get ahead, there's always someone ready to knock you down. It's just not a congenial atmosphere. It's not like win-win environment at all. You can get ahead, but you've always got to keep your back covered. And, you know, you see politicians do it all the time, and you get disgusted with it. You know, they get into office, and then they put all their opposition and political enemies in jail and murder them. And, oh, how gross. But look at society. What do? They get into a job and they get a position, and you know their first thing is to try to, anybody who's after their job, they try to make them look bad so that they're stable and secure in their position. It goes on in the real world. And any of you who are working in the corporate world, or any of you who will be working in the corporate world soon, keep your eyes open. If you think you've seen a little politics in ISKCON, this is kids stuff. You know, there's much more out there in the uncontrolled world. They paint it very nice colors, so it looks pretty and nice, but underneath the plastic smiles and the pretension and whatever, there's a lot of nasty stuff. So the trickle-down effect will be that you will become indifferent to all that is being heard and not all that is to be heard when your intelligence passes out of the dense forest of illusion. Then you can act as a matter of duty in your particular ashram, ultimately with a purpose of surrendering to Krishna, or you will be more or less practically surrendered to Krishna, because karmana manasa gira, even if you haven't fully realized the absolute truth, but you're surrounded, you know, your senses cannot break loose from the corral, you know, like the horses that, or the cows, and you know, some bandits come and let down a few pieces of wood in the corral, and then all the cattle get out and go running all over the place, and a big stampede, and people get killed, and see it in all the cowboy movies and everything. Your corral will be strong, your senses won't be able to move, they'll be forced to surrender to Krishna, your mind will be fixed on Krishna, and you will experience serenity and freedom from fear, freedom from attachment, and you'll be liberated. And these are things that we talk about, but what do you think that the activities of the Vaishnavas mentioned in the Shastras is all about? It's liberated souls, dealing with liberated souls. It's not that problems didn't come up, but they were sense-controlled. They were liberated souls, and they could deal in a very loving way. So this austerity, it's worth it to go through this austerity, to hear about it constantly, to associate with devotees, to talk about it. Katiyantaschamam nityam tushyanticha ramanticha. And then you'll see. So tomorrow, try and cover penance, although tomorrow's my last day.